guys. Well, I got some good news and I got some bad news. The bad news is we had some internet connectivity problems, so we had some moments where the call dropped. We took out most of the dead air, but you know, there's a little bit of us complaining in there, which I'm going to leave for the because I don't know, I think it's funny. Like it. It's like humanizing, you know, like, hey, just because I've done 80 episodes doesn't mean shit doesn't still go wrong. And the good news is this is not going to have any ads, so you can get right to the episode. And with that being said, I'm going to shut up. All right, welcome back to CastleCom, episode 79, episode 80. I don't know, I smoke too much pot. I'm not good at counting. Today, we have a very interesting guest today. We have a man who has done a lot, seen a lot, and played a lot. We have the one, the only Mushu Dynasty. Mushu, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, man. I appreciate you inviting me on here. I think actually this is like my first ever official podcast that I've actually been invited to.
Really? Have you crashed other podcasts? Are you like a wedding crasher with podcasts? You just bump into places?
Well, you know,
like, sir, we were talking about Israel Palestine. What are you doing here? It's like, oh, dude, I came to talk about Tarkov.
Excellent. Most of the time when I'm making like a public speech or a public appearance, it's during somebody's charity event. Typically.
Oh, for sure.
This last TwitchCon was interesting though. Like, so we're talking about first here, right? My first official podcast appearance. Well, the last TwitchCon, I actually did my first in-person autograph, my first in-person interview. That was wild.
So when you did your first person interview, like autograph, did that feel surreal? Was it weird? Like, did you think somebody was fucking with you? Or was it like one of those moments where you're like, oh my God, this is a core memory. I'm saving this for when I'm old and have dementia.
Yeah, it absolutely was a core memory. Like, I saw this guy's, you know, username on his Twitch badge, and I knew he was around the Tarkov circles in the community. And, yeah, that was pretty cool. I signed a t-shirt that a bunch of streamers, he was walking around having a bunch of streamers sign it. Very cool, Tarkov guy.
Hell yeah. So when it comes to public speaking, because you said you did do some, like, you know, some speaking elements where you, how do you deal with the stress of that? Because there are people who have like insane social distress when it comes to being that person on stage. Now, do you experience that? And if so, what do you use to, like, you know, find a ways around your brain, so to speak?
Yeah, I want to say that I'm a pretty strong public speaker, and like I'm pretty good at being put on the spot. And the only reason for that is I strongly attribute it to, you know, I had kind of a rough childhood growing up, right? You had to have some sort of street smarts. You had to have some sort of wit about you. And I never cracked a book in high school. Ended up graduating with all C's. Never did homework.
C's get degrees.
But yeah, and then, you know, obviously that transition from 17 to 18 and then going into the military a few months later. And then I also got, you know, put into a unique role in a search and rescue unit where I was like, it was me and, you know, either a squadron of A-10 pilots that are commissioned officers or a squadron of pararescue. You know what I mean? Right. So it was like, if I'm speaking to anybody or I'm talking to anybody, like I was one of the very few enlisted guys and I was lower ranking, right? So you learn to articulate your words and your sentences very quickly around higher ranking people, especially in the military. So yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about because my role in the Navy was I was a preventive medicine technician. So I would have to like constantly do like base inspections and I'd have to do a briefing with like all the brass and all the people who designed the base. Be like, I don't know why you guys put your latrines like, you know, downhill of your food and your berthing, but this was a terrible idea. But you can't tell them it's terrible. You have to be like, you know, that was a good effort, guys. But you have to like award it professionally.
This situation might be less than ideal, and in order to better execute mission operations, I would prefer we relook this and come up with a better strategy.
Right. You have to be very...
You know what I mean? You got to work it around.
Right. You can't just tell them, this place is fucked. You got to get poop in your water. Don't do this. You have to say it as professionally as possible.
I think if you let me put a lot of work into this, I think I can really help with this situation and make it more efficient. That's how you tell them that, you know, your idea sucks and I can do it better, but I'm gonna just dance around it a little bit, right?
So you were dealing with A-10 Warthogs, which is, for those of you who don't know, military wise, that's the plane that goes burr, that shoots out big old fucking shells of the signs of an old like an old-timey milk bottle that one would receive on their doorstep. And pararescue is pretty much the Air Force's spec forces when it comes to, you know, retrieving people who were behind lines. They call them PJs. So were you, in fact, a PJ, or did you work just really close with them?
I was not a PJ, so my official title in the Air Force was Aviation Management. So basically what we did was we were the problem solvers behind the ops desk that anything to get the plane off the ground and the mission success, we were coordinating the administrative side of it. So like a plane had an in-flight emergency, or there's something maintenance-wise where they're sitting on the ramp and they can't take off, or, you know, but anything that goes on came through me and the ops commander, which was usually a lieutenant colonel or a full-bird colonel, you know, just sitting next to me at her computer.
So you were the lowest ranking person in this, but the person who had the most hands on the most of just about everything.
I mean, it got pretty intense when, you know, you get a high ranking officer up there and you go to clear everybody to step, you do the mission briefing and everything, and you are the last line between that pilot getting in the aircraft without a training requirement done and possibly having an accident that would fall back on you. Right. So it doesn't matter the rank, like those squadrons were pretty, they were more like a family than anything. Like we were all on level playing fields. It didn't really matter rank until it was time to get in trouble, right? Like the rank really didn't matter. Like we would go out and like I remember in Vegas, we went out and we were shooting craps with the base commander and stuff. Like it just didn't matter. And I was a low level enlisted guy, right? Any military person would understand that, but
I think they would. Like it's one of those things where I encountered a lot of very similar experiences in country and out with higher ranking people, and those are some of my fondest experiences. Those are some of the funnest fucking moments I had, and also some of the most dangerous looking back. But you know, I digress. It's funny when you said the family bit, because when you said that, I just pictured a bunch of Air Force people around a dinner table with the fucking Olive Garden. Hey, when you're here, your family, welcome to the 436,
you know,
or whatever.
You aren't far off of that. You aren't far off. Like we would go to the squadron commander's house for dinner sometimes, you know, with a couple people. Like it was a very close, tight-knit group in the search and rescue area of the Air Force. And you know, not a lot of people probably know this, but only 2% of the Air Force actually flies or does operations on a, you know, an aerial vehicle. And then the rest, you know, just facilitate it all. And, you know, but there were times, that you could ride as mission essential ground personnel. Cause you know, you travel around with all these people and, there's some perks to it, right? You essentially you're like one of 10 people in a 150 person squadron that, you know, I'm just saying rough numbers. It's been a long time since I've been in, I don't know.
Exactly.
But it felt like I was one of 10 out of like 200, people. And the rest were, you know, commissioned officers, and they got treated as such, so we kind of just tagged along, you know. It was kind of cool.
I'm gonna fucking guarantee you right now there's some kid listening to this who's gonna push up their, like, you know, BCG glasses they just got from boot camp, and they're like, "Oh, actually," and they're gonna be like trying to like send me the actual like formation
really
numbers.
3% that fly,
right? Well, I will tell you this, the Navy has more pilots than the Air Force. I mean, just because
a branch,
it is actually true, which is crazy. Yeah, and it's but you know, you guys won in the long run because all of the Space Force people are not Navy ranks, they're Air Force ranks, which is
now,
bullshit.
Does the Navy consider pilots people that drive boats too?
You know what? That's a good question.
I mean, technically you're piloting a vessel, right?
This is very true. 100%. This is true. You know, I've never experienced that part. I spent most of my time, because I was a medic, and I spent most of my time on the ground with CBs, Marines, an Army component. I actually spent very little time on a ship, which I'm very happy about, because it's just a floating high school. Everybody I've ever talked to who has spent long times on a ship, they fucking hated it, and I don't blame them. So
I couldn't imagine, dude.
Oh, it's imagine being just on a fucking in the middle of the ocean in a thing that holds thousands of people, and you maybe like four of them. Everyone else kind of sucks. You're like, oh god.
Listen, I don't even have the desire to get on like a commercial cruise ship, so there's no way I could ever do that for a job.
Okay, so when you say commercial cruise ship, like, you know, like, are you talking about like a Carnival cruise or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. It's like, I have no desire to go out and do that.
Imagine just looking around and then just being like, when you're here, your family, I'm going to war
are these men and women? Like, oh God, no.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine that, man. I did think, I do remember around the World Trade Center time, or maybe it was like 5 or 6 years after 2001, something like, maybe it was like the time, I think I graduated in 07 and went to basic in 08. So okay. I remember the Navy made a vessel out of like the metal from
they did.
The World Trade Center. That was so cool.
I think
cool,
that
man.
Was the Independence. I think that was the one. And then I heard a rumor, I'm not sure if it's true, like the Cole, the one that got bombed by a suicide like boat guy and almost sank.
Well, USS Cole.
Yeah, I heard that they put some seal into that one too. I don't know if that's true, but I know there is a ship that's completely built with World Trade Center metal. I think that was the Independence. I'm pretty sure that's an LHD. The ones that, you know, they launch those big hover like landing craft.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's the ship I'm thinking of. I could be totally wrong. Watch it be like a fucking destroyer or something completely dumb. Like, once again,
comes the actually crowd.
Actually, I bet he's not even a real sailor. He's never fucking eaten chocolate peanut butter off a hooker in Thailand. He's not a real sailor.
True.
Or some shit. Oh, God. What a horrible image.
All right, I gotta ask, because we're going down the military route. What was your favorite MRE, man?
Oh, God. So, okay. I'm going to break it down very simply. The vegetarian ones, I could not fuck with because they were disgusting.
Yeah.
The breakfast ones, anything that has to do with egg, gross. Chili Mac was always gone. I always wanted the Chili Mac, and it was always fucking gone.
Bomb, right? It was like Hamburger Helper, like from Wish.
It was really good, but people would steal that. They would get sniped. They'd be like, oh my God. They brought the two MRE boxes. Like, which one's the Bravo box? And they would grab the secondary one because they knew that one had more of them. Yeah, so I would always get stuck with like some subpar shit. I will say that the hash brown one is not bad. The hash brown one's pretty good.
I didn't have any hash browns.
They added a lot of one. They actually have one that's a beef taco. And I'll send you a picture of the beef taco. The beef taco is actually one that's like a Lunchable with like, you know, this really gross, like, you know, heat up ground meat in a tortilla. You put it in there and you can eat it like that. And now they have MRE pizza, which I never got to try. I got out right around the time MRE pizza was a thing. But the hash brown one was probably the one I fucked with the most.
Man, I didn't have any of those. But I also didn't have MREs that's on either. It was mostly basic training and then like maybe once a year. You're on an exercise, dude. Yeah.
And that was enough. That was enough.
Yeah. That was enough. Actually, I do remember eating MREs when they made the base lockdown and they simulated like an attack on our dining halls or something stupid because they're just bored. I don't even know why the hell they did it. Like we're you know, 4 hours south of Atlanta. Nobody's just blowing up our dining halls, dude. Relax. You know,
maybe terrorists were low blood sugar. They wanted, oh shit, dude, I didn't take my Frank Thomas testosterone pills. I need something to eat. Let's go to the dining hall.
Yeah, man. Oh. It's hilarious. It was so like you get a really good look at how monotonous and how much waste goes on when you go through the military life.
An insane amount of waste. So not to go too far down that rabbit hole. So somebody who was in the military and had a pretty important job with a pretty important unit, like it's really cool that you were able to get like that kind of, like it's a great buildup for somebody who's going in at a young age. You get the confidence, you get to learn like who's who in the zoo and you do all that sort of stuff. You learn how things operate. And then when you transition to the civilian world, it's like completely like no handheld. It's like, oh, I'm just here. And nobody gives a shit about what I did. And then once I tell them I'm a veteran, the immediate thing they ask is, oh, did you kill anybody? Or, you know, do you have PTSD? Which is just horrible. So the question I had was, coming out of the military and dealing with the civilian sector, did that push you to looking for things that were self-occupational, like, you know, making your own business, becoming a streamer, becoming a content creator? Did that lead heavily to that?
Absolutely not, dude. It was a complete dumpster fire. When I got out, I went through the VA and they had me on like, ugh. I don't know, it had to be 10 different medications a day, dude. And
VA's
it was just,
fucked.
Yeah, man. And so I was like that. I went up to, I was probably damn near 300 pounds, dude. And you know, I'm 6 feet and right now I weigh 210. So for comparison, like, it was awful, man. I just, I honestly don't know how I got through the first 2 years of that. And actually 5 or 6 years after I got out, it was pretty much a wreck, dude. Like I struggled very hard through that whole time. And I come to realize now that, you know, I'm doing nonprofit and charity work with some of these orgs that work with vets. And I'm, you know, learning over the years, That's a main reason why the suicide metric in vets is so high right now.
You know,
they get out, they lack the camaraderie, the brotherhood, the first sergeant they can call in their time of need. You don't have that anymore. Like you come back to your family and you know, even after a year or two, I was actually in four, but things change, you know what I mean? My family didn't change. I just found, you know, I just eventually learned that they were kind of toxic, and you know, everybody from my hometown that didn't leave, it was drugs.
It's
or
bad.
Drugs or like a blue collar 9-to-5 where they're, you know, breaking their back every day. They're not like, everybody's on autopilot, right? Like nobody was reaching to do anything more with their life than just survive, right?
It's like, I'm just going to go to work and I'm going to come home. I'm going to fucking crack open a beer. I'm going to eat dinner. I'm going to go to sleep and reset because this is what I've been, you know, doing my whole life. Like this is pretty much, they fall into these ruts. So I know exactly what you mean. Whereas in the military, it's like, hey, you want to go to the gym? We have a free gym. Or, hey, we had to all wake up at 4 a.m. together. Let's run. Let's hang out. Oh, you're trying to study for that exam? I just took that exam. Like, you know, you're just around all these people who are just like, it's like built-in friends. It's like all this built-in camaraderie, like you said. And the cool thing is everyone's held accountable, at least for the most part in the military. Some people get away with that. But when you go to the civilian side, nobody wants to be held accountable for anything. When you try to hold somebody accountable, they try to fight you.
Yeah, and also another thing I noticed in the civilian side compared to the military side of things is nobody takes pride in anything they do anymore, like
none.
As far as like working or anything. Like nobody, it's very rare to find somebody who goes above and beyond when they're either working or just, you know, out and about. It's always like, I find that a majority of civilians that didn't go through military life are just running the bare minimum, man. And it makes me sad, to be honest, but it really is a good thing to have in perspective when it comes to being in this industry, right? Doing podcasts and streaming and games and having exposure to different things. You know, there's room for growth there instead of, hey, I might get a promotion in 3 years for 50 cents, you know, and obviously I'm not in this for the money. I do this completely for charity. I don't I've probably, so obviously I've been an affiliate since I think I made affiliate my first month on Twitch, and that was 4 years ago.
Nice.
But I started on YouTube for like a year and a half, and you know, I get sub money. You know, I've had good months, I've had bad months, and I very rarely talk about my finances. But I think for a podcast, it's appropriate as far as, you know, what we're about to segue into, I guess. Right.
Because I was kind of leaning towards the mental health aspect of it, and people have a lot of misconceptions about streamers on, you know, and their mental, and like, in reality, how much they make. Because I know people who I even work with, I work with this very young guy, it's like, oh, that guy's got like 100 subs, he must be fucking loaded, and be like, ah, I don't know, you, well, like, not quite.
There's where I turn into the actually, you know?
Right. Exactly. It's one of those things where if just people, like, I don't know if it's like because we're so used to growing up watching people on TV and movies and being like, oh yeah, they have a great life because they make a bunch of money, and then seeing people in the content creation thing who are also on a screen, like people just have these really weird misconceptions about their lives, and at the end of the day, they're normal people. They go through normal things. Like, I don't know about you, but it feels like 2023, I've seen a lot of people posting things about mental health and not having a good time. I know I went through a stretch of it too. I think, you know, we all are fucking we're all victim to it at one point or another. Like, this is the kind of industry where if you don't look out for yourself, things can accumulate and they can become overbearing, and you see it all the time, and that's not something that gets talked about enough.
Yeah, that's facts, man. And not comparing yourself to others when you're doing this, and kind of, you know, focusing on your own lane is super important,
right?
But when it comes to what I wanted to do, man, I ended up you know, going through the VA and getting a rating, right? So
right.
What was I going to do with my time? Everybody else was drinking and doing drugs around me, right? And
right.
Then, I just decided I was sick of it, dude. I was sick of the people around me, and I pretty much left everybody behind that I knew, my entire family, everybody. I stopped talking to everybody. That's been 6 or 7 years now, and I'm arguably in the best mental health and I wouldn't say physical health, but we're getting there,
right? One thing at a time. I mean,
I have been in 10 years, you know, 15, 20 years, I don't know, my entire adult life, I guess,
right? And just exiting from that setup that you know, it's like, oh, it's your family. Oh, these are your people you grew up with. Like, just because you have time in with somebody and just because you have that history, if they're not good for your mental health, they're just not good for your mental health. And sometimes you have to be the one who stands up and walks away from the table. And that's something that a lot of people just don't do, whether it be they're guilted into staying around said circles or they're afraid. Because starting from ground zero, like, you know, from square one, is it's daunting. It's scary for a lot of people. Shit, you even see that in the content creation world where somebody builds up around one game, sure, and then they get tired of playing. They're afraid to leave. Like, I don't want to leave this circle, even though I feel like I've outgrown it.
Yeah, that it happens all the time, especially in Tarkov, man. Like, we've had content creators that have been mainly playing Tarkov for years that are just like, it's really not for me right now. Like, you know, right. I'm going to go play something else. And the toll that would have on your mental health after, you know, building a community and a reputation around the game, you know, that you're in the community of, it's stressful, man.
Especially with stressful.
When I switched from Tarkov to doing DCS World, I thought, you know, this was going to kill my channel. I'm not even going to see my regulars anymore. Like, and you know, I don't take any of it for granted. You know, I get one person that shows up and is enjoying themselves, then it was worth, but
right.
It is a scary transition going from your base game that you've built your community around to something else. That is very true.
It's just the unknown.
Like the military to civilian transition.
Right. Or the civilian to military transition. Like when you come off that bus and then the shortest person you ever seen in your life starts yelling at you and you got to put your fucking feet on these yellow feet and you got to walk through either, you know, a Marine Corps depot, a Navy depot, or beautiful Texas where the Air Force does their basic training. I went to great mistakes. I've never seen snow before falling because I grew up in a beach town. So when I went to boot camp, it was Chicago in the winter. So sucked ass. Never seen snow before falling, so I got caught looking at snow falling on a window. We were supposed to be walking down the hallway or P-way, and my RDC was just like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was just like, I'm looking at snow. I've never seen it before. He's like, oh, you've never seen snow. And he put me on this thing called Snow Watch. So every day at like 4 a.m. I had to wake up and shovel snow.
Oh, no, dude.
That's how my career started. Yeah, we all have these weird things.
The first
things
time
like
I ever rode an airplane was on the way to Air Force basic training, actually.
Nice. So how did
that crazy?
That is pretty fucking crazy. And you guys are, it's near San Antonio, if I remember correctly, where you are on board the Air Force. There you go, Lackland Air Force Base, that's right. So when it came to getting used to, like, living a very, like, you know, strict, formulated way of life, and then going the civilian way of life, like, I know we already talked about the circles that you had to, like, you know, realize weren't good for you and move away, but, like, how long did it take for you to reestablish a routine in the civilian world that was, you know, beneficial for you?
The
hard one, I know. Yeah, like, you know, not doing drugs with your high school homies, like, you know, like one does when they go back to their hometown. And that's like you said, sure, the people who are still here, the people who either got a job and just fucking put their head down and are grinding until they're going to die. Or, you know, the ones that just never took off and just like, I just like doing drugs and that's just who they are. And it's sad, but it happens.
I mean, that's pretty much what I did. I did the same deal, like the 9 to 5, come home, drink, you know, drink every weekend. And it was just like acceptable, right? Mental health wasn't in anybody's vocabulary around me.
Oh, no, there's a stigma around it. If anything, you were a weaker person for getting mental health back in the day, as fucked up as that was.
Just tough it up, right?
Right. It's just like that one streamer we saw who recently got famous. That girl was like, Ben didn't cry during the war days, so why are they allowed to be sad now? Did you see that clip that's making its way around?
You like, can't be sad as a man. Like, you guys used to go to war and it's like bad, so why are you sad? Like, okay, man.
It's like, there's a lot in between.
Lady, I've never seen somebody so damn out of touch with reality.
I mean,
hell.
I think her and the fucking no bad vibes, I don't care if your mom died on a Friday, guys should get together. They seem like they're pretty much on the same wavelength.
And you know what it's not even, isn't even the fact that, like, she is that out of touch with how things actually are. It's the fact that the being like that actually really helped her get exposure and you know, growth. That's the most annoying part to me.
People love controversy, and the thing that sucks is a content creator can do something outlandish or say something terrible, and really, what backlash do they get?
I mean, if anything, they're just going to get a positive boost in numbers. Like, people are going to view them, whether it's just to come in there and shit talk or whether it's just follow them and to watch just in case something else like that happens. Like, unless Twitch gives them a ban, which usually the bans are very low in actual enforcement unless it's something crazy. But then again, somebody just had sex on Twitch and they only got banned for 7 days. And then on Kick, you got this guy who's actually fucking prostitutes on the street and he's not getting banned at all. Like, it's kind of the wild west. Like, people are just going to start doing fucked up shit just to get views.
That reminds me. Remember when... explicit podcast, right?
Yeah, say whatever you want.
Remember
dude.
When that?
I just said fucking prostitutes in the street, Mushu Dynasty. Yeah. I think you're good.
That's okay, that's fair. Listen, remember that chick that like bent over and showed her whole asshole.
Her whole asshole. Like, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Like that was definitely premeditated, calculated. Like she knew.
I'm pretty sure the flag was at half mast for that. I'm pretty sure the flag went to half. Everyone knew about that.
I'm telling you, dude. Like I'm almost certain that was like calculated. She either got paid behind the scenes and knew she wasn't getting. Well, she was a Twitch partner, right?
Mushu, how could that not be calculated? Like, who sets up a camera back there and then like does that? Like, I don't know how often you do that in your gaming channel. I don't.
You don't know what other site she streams on, okay? She could have clicked the wrong OBS go live button. You know what I'm saying?
This is very true. But you think you would want a secondary program so those mistakes don't happen?
But hey,
yeah, true.
These things happen. And I wouldn't be surprised if that person did venture into the OF community or to any other community like that. And if so, you know, everyone's got to get their back one way or another. Like, was that something I'd partake in? No.
I'm pretty sure she was a Twitch partner as well.
Probably still is. Probably just got like a 4-day ban.
If she wasn't, she is now. That's damn sure.
Think about the way, like, the guy who killed Harvey Milk said he ate too many Twinkies and the excess sugar made him do it. I'm sure she gave Twitch some fucking stupid thing and she got away with it too. Be like, oh, you know, I took so much fucking NyQuil. I just, you know, something about that NyQuil makes me really want to do that on camera.
You know, like, I think there was somebody pranked me with itching powder and it was
oh god. So when it comes to like all the stuff that you are going through this current year, speaking of like new beginnings and transitions, you recently just moved into a barn, is that correct? Now are you,
yeah.
Is this like an actual like animal farm minus the, you know, the George Orwellian communist animals?
We got 4 horses, 13 cows. Like,
my god, that's a lot of work.
A bunch of ducks, geese, and we got some black sheep and rams, and we're about to have baby lambs next month. We're getting ready for that.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, that we just we're helping somebody out with their, and you know, it's honestly a beautiful place to be and live, and it's a good lifestyle to go out in the morning, and it kind of ties into how I formed my stream and my charity and my community as well. Like, I'm a huge believer in having a purpose higher than yourself, and you know, we were talking about finances. Like I said, I got a rating. I do what I can to survive, you know, but streaming and doing charity work gives me that purpose higher than myself.
And it's probably very good for your mental health to turn or like, you know, to help people. Like, helping people is like, it's so gratifying in so many ways, whether it's something as small as like, you know, donating blood or going to like, you know, one of those food drive things. Like, you know, everybody has the capacity to help. It's unfortunate more people don't do that. So for somebody who, like, you know, does that on a regular basis, would you say it's been beneficial to like not only your overall mental health but how you feel about yourself as a person?
I'm gonna be dead serious with you for a second. The community that I've formed and being able to make actual change in the world playing video games saved my life, man. Like, this whole thing, I cannot even believe I made it this far from where I was at. My community.
Oh, you cut out for 1 second.
I've built up very good people. Actually saved my life, dude. It's crazy.
See, it's not crazy. You get out, and the VA, the guys who are supposed to have your back, like they love to throw pills at it, and they don't like to address the root things. But the community that you were able to cultivate was able to help you a lot more than probably the VA ever did.
Yeah, that's facts, man. But also, you know, on the flip side of that, very competitive. This is a doggy dog industry. Everybody wants to play video games, right? So I decided to make it for a purpose higher than my own personal gain, and thought I took the Dr. Lupo route. If I'm able to use how he's fundraising for different charities and use his strategies and his kind of model in a sense, but I obviously mine's a little more R-rated, and we talk about dicks sometimes, but
right, well, who doesn't what military veteran doesn't talk about dicks on occasion?
I don't know. I just feel like how you start it really matters, and you have to foster good people around you. And that's when, when I left pretty much everybody I knew IRL behind, I'm gonna check out this streaming thing, and started watching Lupo and charity stuff, and that was 6 or 7 years ago now.
So when you were watching streams 5 or 6 years ago, what do you remember your aha moment where you're like, I could do this,
and having major support, and I have some announcements coming out within the next 3 weeks that are just I can't even believe I'm gonna be able to post them from my account. It's crazy.
Oh yeah,
man.
I saw you saying something like that, like you were you're looking into different forms of content, like long form content. You're looking for somebody who knows how to operate a drone, but they'd want them to send an NDA because it's gonna be all hush hush. So I'm not gonna ask you to spill the beans on here, because like obviously you got things on the pot, you got things growing.
Sorry, you're breaking up a little bit, but what was that last word?
I said you got things that are cultivating. You got things that are in the works.
Yeah, so I'm finding that, if we're actually, so we're just helping the owner of this farm gets ready to sell here in the next few months. Okay. From there is who knows, but we are gonna try to come together and see if that's the goal, but given that, on the content side of things, I'm gonna be outside a lot more. I'm gonna be doing more farm content on my channel, so nice. I have a Wi-Fi extender. We're gonna get Wi-Fi for like a 300 meter circle. It's crazy. And then so we'll be able to farm stream taking care of the animals, and then the consistency, man, the consistency and structure that I have to have in my life, super beneficial to my mental health.
Right.
That's also another thing that's missing from the military when you transition.
And what better place to stay busy than a farm?
In the morning. Yeah, if I know I have to wake up at 7:30 in the morning, or an innocent animal isn't going to get fed or let out to the field, there's no way I could ever be selfish about it and neglect it.
Right.
So it's like a forced structure, right?
Having something like that bringing you out of bed is a lot more drive impact than like, oh, when I wake up, I wake up. And when I start stream, I start stream. Like, not having that thing, it's kind of being rudderless, not having like a reason to get up in the morning, a reason to go out and do something. Like having, like you said, a helpless animal who's waiting for you to feed them. Like, what better motivator would one need other than like maybe a child?
Something like this. But, we see an opportunity in it. And since to do Tarkov usually in the evenings now.
Your mic is cutting out a little bit.
I'm taking my YouTube inspiration from Mark Rober, and we're gonna do some cool stuff that I haven't seen anybody do yet. So I'm gonna give it a shot. What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, I'm curious to see, because like you hinted that a little bit back with your first stream from the farm. So how difficult was it to pick up your entire setup, reestablish it in a new location, or was it something that was just pretty much second nature because you spend a lot of time with your equipment and machinery?
Man, I've taken my setup down and put it up so much now that it's honestly to take if I had to take my entire setup down and put it back up, it'd probably take me an hour or two. Really not awful.
That's not that bad at all.
Yeah, it's not awful, man. It's just there's more on the there's more to do on the software side of things, like reconfiguring Windows when you move your setup and sound and audio and all that. That takes longer than anything else, I think. But I've done it so much that it's just like, I don't know, I'm used to it now. I know where everything goes and how I want it. And
nice. So like when you were watching people, when you were first getting into streamers 5 or 6 years ago, do you remember that aha moment where you're like, I could do this. I could be a streamer. Do you remember that moment in time?
Yeah, I was watching Tim Ack. Okay. Do you know Tim Ack?
I have not personally watched them. I've heard their name around the scene, though.
He might. I don't know if he's a veteran or not, but he was. I found him doing Grand Theft Auto roleplay on NoPixel as a cop. That was like 5-6 years ago. And prior to that, I had my own nonprofit that was teaching, developing curriculum and teaching police crisis intervention methods.
Okay.
So, and obviously I was a security forces augmentee. So if they had like, I don't know, a training exercise popped off, or, you know, we could basically stand in as police officers. Right. So we had all that initial training and all that. So I saw him role playing as a police officer, and I was like, and it just clicked, dude. I was like, dude, I could totally do that. And then that's when I was like, okay, we're getting this going. And ironically, I didn't even start with the GTA RP stuff, but we did get into that quite a bit later, and it was awesome.
So when it comes to like the role play aspect of that, do you still use role playing in your gameplay today? Like when you're in Tarkov, do you VoIP? Do you play a character? When you play Dark and Darker, if you play Dark and Darker, do you play like the role that you are?
Sometimes, like what? Like when I play Tarkov, my connection's cutting out here. I don't know what is going on.
It's a little choppy. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's perfect until you turn on a podcast. It's like when you're doing a fucking audio exam. If everyone's phones are quiet until you, like, you know, start the recorder, then they all start to go off. It's just one of those things.
I might have been talking over you a little bit because it's, like, cutting out or something. I'm not sure.
Oh, it's all good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Did you ask me if I role-played in Tarkov? Is that,
yeah. Do you role-play in any other games?
Dude, sometimes you got to throw in the cowboy raid, right? You got to grab the revolver and the cowboy hat and go in and like you're the factory sheriff. Like I'm sure most people have tried that. You got to role play as a cowboy in Tarkov. Also, I mainly role play as just a dead person in Tarkov. That's what I do best. Yeah.
I think most of us do right now. Right now, I'm probably role playing as a guy who's trying not to get seasick, getting rubber banded on streets.
Yeah, I was very sad on wipe day when I was in my computer completely powers off when I play
streets. Was that like a one time thing, or did it happen multiple times? You're just getting completely cut off on streets?
No. Every time I would load up streets, it would power off, like hard power off, like you pulled the power cord.
What? That's insane. Have you tried since they put out a patch recently that they said they optimized it a little bit more? Have you tried since? I think you cut out again. Huh. That's not good.
My internet is completely jacked. Can we finish like this?
Yeah, absolutely. We can totally finish like this. So.
Okay.
We're back, everybody. Little technical difficulties, internet problems happen. It's a fucking thing. So, like we were talking about with, you know, cultivating your own community and going for there and being a force for good and doing good things out there, like, is it hard to maintain sometimes those positive things when the community that you're harboring, like the games they play, when they're going through rough transition times and, you know, bullshit that happens on Twitter, like what we saw with the Tarkov community early in the wipe?
I'd say whenever I believe in vulnerability. I'm going to drop you a little Bible is a TED talk from like 12 years ago by Nate Brown, The Power of Vulnerability. And that's how I try to put my community the same way. And, you know, we're all very open about our mental health and, you know, you normalize the struggle, everybody goes through shit. And, if you allow people to say you're vulnerable, it gives permission for others to be. And, you know, that allows the ability to talk about negative things and not have such a negative impact on the whole situation. When you know, you can come to Mushu's channel or Mushu's community and they're cool about talking with mental health, or if you're struggling, like, I saw a clip about trauma dumping and this guy, you know, basically, berating this person because of
her mom dying.
So when you have a chance to choose compassion and empathy and you choose to be selfish, then that's where you should really like redraw the line and rethink things, because you're really at that point, you're judging people's pain as less than your own. And that's just, it's not the way to roll, man.
Right. And it just seems like a very fucking negative place to be in that mindset, to just be constantly knocking people down who are coming to you for help. And it, the way that guy kind of went about it, it kind of felt like he was doing it as like almost like a comedy skit. Like he was doing it to try to, like, you know, get other people involved. Like it almost felt like he was trying to get a laugh out of it. It was just like, how fucked up do you gotta be to take a situation like that and to try to like make it into a positive for yourself while putting somebody else down who's definitely going through it? So it's, as content creators, especially ones of, like, you know, bigger sizes with partners and all that, like there's a lot of potential to really do damage to somebody's ego, whether you're trying to or not.
Back to that whole thing where we talked about, you know, negative exposure, but it was still a lot of exposure, right?
Right.
And then the backpedal apology and all that, right? And I try to stay in my own lane. I try not to throw any negative opinions out on,
right,
I try to keep things positive, but I'm also not scared to say, you know, your boy's struggling this week, you know, like I'm struggling today, man, let's play some Tarkov, or, you know,
right. You're not afraid to put yourself out there, because, you know, that goes a long way too. Like, not only to help you put those vibes out there and create like a channel, but it also helps people. It's like, oh, like I'm not doing great either, so it's okay to talk about it. Like, you know, seeing somebody else in the community who one might respect saying something like that can, like, you know, help somebody's own mental game, because the mental game of streaming is not something that is very talked about, and it's also something that's really hard to deal with, especially when you feel like you have to go on, or you have to be on, or you have to do something that you might not necessarily want to do, especially if your livelihood, or, like, you know, your attempted livelihood depends on it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think if you're, and, you know, adding on the mental health part of it and normalizing the struggle also gives you the ability to be relatable.
Right. It's very humanizing when somebody's like telling you about their shit.
Yeah. Also when you do a lot of people don't think about it, but when you do these charity events, like for instance, we did one for the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. I think that was in October. Or September, but regardless, a lot of people's lives have been touched by breast cancer in a very, very negative way, right?
Oh yeah, horribly.
Everybody knows somebody who's a veteran, or, you know, man, cancer kind of the same way, you know, and realize, you know, when people come into your chat, what effect it has on the streamer, how many stories they get of, My aunt died, Mushu, of breast cancer. Thank you for doing this, man. Or my cousin's currently struggling, stage 4. Like, you constantly are exposed to that kind of
these stories,
reality about, and, you know, they're your supporters, so you care about them. But at the same time, it can on your mental health. Like,
oh, if absolutely.
You watch Dr. Lupo read out some of these donations, I mean, the dude cries sometimes, you know, and that's fine, because he understands the impact he's having, and he has deep empathy, right?
Right. See, it's one of those things where until you get those stories, like, it humanizes not only the cause, but it also humanizes the person on the chat wall. Because, you know, until you get, like, faced with those realities, or you get to know these people who are in your videos watching, I mean, they're just a name. They're just somebody who talks to you. It's like when you, like, get down to, like, things like that, like heavy things that, like, really solidifies them, is like, wow, this person's going through this, and the fact that they're in here willing to talk about that, you know, it just brings it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, like a good example of that, I hope he doesn't mind me putting him on blast, but, you know, he's telling us all this in my general Discord channel, and he's been a part of my community. There's a young guy, I won't say his name, but he's going into course, and he's in the delayed entry program, and obviously, you know, we got a ton of vets and to offer up advice and help and get him through the recruitment process, and he's waiting on his basic date right now. And it's cool to see, like, very through that the correct way, like I did not have, right?
Because right. There's so many pitfalls when you're getting started.
The community support.
Even if it's something simple, like, hey, when you get to the boot camp, don't pee at the airport. You know, simple things like that help so much when you're going through it.
My recruiter told me that
that I didn't have to shower with anybody else at basic. And I was like, hell yeah, the airport's kind of easy, you know? I was expecting that, actually. Let's go.
Oh my God.
You know, the first day we got there and it was shower time, it was like
the Costco of dicks. Every color, every shape, every size is there. Oh, I remember going through Navy one, and there's a dude who liked to sing in the shower. So we're all just there, miserable, showering, and there's this one dude just singing his fucking heart out.
For each shower head, and you got one naked dude in the middle, like doing that.
Oh, you're cutting out again.
Like, what the hell did I get myself into?
Right? Once you turn that corner, it's just like, oh, yep, this is the military.
Yeah. Here we go, dude.
Right? Just one of those things. Oh, but you know what? I'm happy I did it. I'm happy I went through it. Like, all the bullshit and all the stuff aside. Like, think of all the self-worth. Think of all the good things that you walked away with it from. I know people, it's really easy to, like, dwell on the negative stuff and the not-so-fun stuff, but I think everybody in their career has a few moments that stand out as fucking amazing and great. Hello. Oh, he's back.
Yeah, I think it's actually Discord because I've been on my phone on a 5G connection and it should be fine.
Should be. It's so weird. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck's going on with Discord. Here, let me close. Let me close Discord, things on my end.
Shit, dude. Stop fucking with the partnership program that nobody gives a shit about and fix the damn thing, okay?
Right, I pay for Nitro. You think it would be better? I don't know what's going on. This is so fucking weird. But, you know, we push forward. We persevere. Sometimes
only
it wants to fight back. Exactly. Fly high and all that. So the fun thing... about
Blue Yonder.
The fun thing about the Air Force is they have a fight song, and the part of it says nothing can stop the U.S. Air Force. But if there's lightning, they won't leave the building. So when I was on a joint forces base, I was stuck in a building because the Air Force couldn't leave because there was lightning 8 miles away.
Yeah. Lightning within 5, lightning within 10, dude. You just are not, like, I don't know how many people the Air Force lost or got injured because of lightning, but it must have been a lot because they don't mess with lightning, bro.
They don't, like, fuck with it.
If there's lightning within 5 to 10 miles from the base, nobody going outside and no planes taking off.
I wonder what the story is behind that. It's like the senior enlisted guy of the Air Force gets fucking hit by lightning and he's like, never again. Like, what happened?
You know, I'm not sure, but I do know, so one of my best friends while I was in, actually, he was my roommate. He was one of my main bros. His name was, we called him Jelly. And he joined the military after his dad died, and you know, his dad left him a bunch of money and stuff, but he didn't have to join the military. So he's like, you know, an E3 riding around in a
Bentley,
E4, you know, living in the dorms, right? It was great. He was a great dude. But he actually, I found out a year after I got out that he was doing a physical fitness test and fell over and died on the track.
Wow. That's crazy.
Turns out it was, yeah, he was in, like, peak physical shape, dude. He's a handsome dude, you know? And yeah, sickle cell anemia. And now it doesn't matter who you are. Everybody gets tested for it in the Air Force now because of that.
I mean, I'm not surprised. Like, that affects platelets bringing oxygen throughout your body, and they just have a harder time regulating because of the size of the platelets. So, yeah, that's a good thing to test for because that's a very preventable death if they were able to identify that right off the bat. So that's terrible that happened, but at least, in despite of the horrible thing that happened, at least future people will not fall victim to it because of that.
Yeah, that's true, man. I mean, you would think through all of that, you know, MEPS and everything we went through with the duck walk and you know,
an old man looking at our asshole, you think they would have figured this out?
Yeah, you're doing all that stuff. You would think that would be part of the requirements, but it took somebody passing away from it to make it. It's crazy. But so yeah, I wonder what the story is behind the lighting, man. Holy hell.
Probably something with some high ranking guy or some bullshit. But like the thing with the friend, like finding the silver lining and, you know, bettering one's thing. That's kind of what you're doing. You're taking all this stuff that, you know, you dealt with the depression after pro service, and you're finding that silver lining of doing community to help people, like, you know, find a place to cultivate that where they can feel better, a place for people to come, a safe place, as you will. And then you're using that community to do other great things, like pulling that over into charity work, doing that over to like donations and helping get money to these research programs that are desperately in need. So that's amazing.
Yeah, man. It literally, like, and then you, so the, it's really awesome doing charity work, but the thing is, it's not realistic for everybody. In fact, it's not realistic for most people, right?
Right.
Because they're trying to make it in the industry, and the economy's hard right now. And
yes,
as far as the ratio goes, and people need to pay bills, dude. So
absolutely,
they don't have time to stream for money to help anybody else, regardless if they want to or not, right? Like, I'm sure everybody would do it. If they were financially secure, at some point they would, you know, do a charity stream. But it's not realistic for everybody, or in fact most people, in my opinion, because right, they have to take care of themselves. Their oxygen mask first, right?
Exactly. And we're in a society right now where the economy, eggs are like $8 a carton around that. Gas is expensive. People need to make a living. So I totally understand why the charity route is something that a lot of people probably would love to do, just don't have the means to do it. And that's also okay. Like, it's okay to not be engaging in those things. Like, I talk to a lot of people who are coming up in this industry, and a lot of people who are, like, you know, finding their feet, so to speak. And sometimes I hear that they feel bad that they don't do those things, or that they don't have the opportunities to do those things, and even in some cases they put themselves in a bad way to do those things. And it's like, that's great, don't get me wrong, but at the end of the day, it's like your own mental health and your livelihood, it needs to come first. Like, if it comes between, like, you know, donating that money or putting food on your own table, you should probably put food on your own table, you know. Like, granted, it might, like,
absolutely,
put a feather in your cap in the community, but a feather in your cap in the community is not going to keep you fed.
That's 100% facts, man. And with that, so that's a good point. I'm glad we went into this with that point in mind, where, you know, you mentioned you have some up and coming people that would like to do charity streams, but it's just not viable right now. I have some things that I'm working on that will allow your more average creator to be able to do what they need to do, as well as help others. So
that's
I can't say too much about it. It's got a lot of moving parts, but yeah, right. There's a mental health aspect project that I have coming as well.
All will be revealed
about that one. I can talk about that one. Actually, we're gonna be working with Twiloha. I'm not sure if you know who they are. It's a 501c3. I believe they're out of, I could be wrong, but on mental health and therapy. And right now, they have the ability to offer people free therapy. So
that's
telehealth,
amazing.
You know, you get to pick your therapist, and then they vet the person. And yeah, so they can give you 3 months of free therapy. I really like them. I talked with their director while I was at TwitchCon, and made a link with them, and we got some exciting things coming up with them, as well as do good points. But yeah,
see, that's huge,
man.
Because
if anybody,
streamers don't have access as one would have with a regular job, where you have, like, you know, a 401k, you have health insurance that would sometimes cover one to go see a therapist. So sometimes streamers who are experiencing these things don't have that insurance to go see somebody, don't have the means to see somebody. So having something like that available in the community would be huge.
Yeah, so personally, I have given up on the VA, and I pay out of pocket for medical care. I use my pension to pay for my own medical care, because I just don't trust the VA.
So,
and what the Twiloha thing looks like, hey, you know, if a streamer is super into mental health, or talking about, you know, I went to therapy today, it was great, or, you know, they're open about that kind of thing to their community, and somebody comes in their chat and says, you know, even please Like, this, it doesn't matter. It's just that name. And they want, you know, to, they want a therapist but can't afford it. Well, we're able to refer them to get that. So
right.
I really love it, and I want to build on it and have ideas and things in the works. So.
And if anybody tries to give you shit for seeing a therapist, you don't need that person in your life. It's like, nobody gives another person a shit for going to the gym. And when you go to the gym, you're trying to better yourself in one way, shape, or form. Going to a therapist is the exact same thing, only you're working your brain as opposed to your fucking other muscles of your body. So anybody who gives you shit for seeing a therapist, maybe reconsider giving them a voice on your platform. You know, it's one of those things where the mental game is so dangerous if you don't take care of it. So if you have the ability to see a therapist,
yeah,
do it.
But you also know damn well that, you know, that's how society is turning into now. But
now, it's bad.
Ago, if you talked about seeing a therapist, you were just outright crazy, dude.
Oh yeah, just like, remember, just 10 years ago, it was taboo to be gay.
Yeah.
Like, the society has come a very long way in a very short amount of time. I say the 90s, actually not 10 years ago, the 90s. The 90s, it was not okay to be like out and about as it is now. It's kind of crazy how society has a way of, like, it was even in movies, it was in popular culture, people were using gay as a negative connotation, like they were using it as a slur, like the F word was pretty prevalent in a lot of things too.
Yeah.
It's crazy looking back at those times and then looking at it now and seeing how far society has come. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who didn't make it to this period because, you know, they were bullied to the point where they did something terrible, or they just didn't survive to that point. And it's crazy how society is so quick to forget those people and be like, yeah, this is always how it's been. And be like, no, like 20 years ago, you guys were assholes about all of this. So unfortunately, it's starting to feel like the same way with mental health. I don't know if it's the influx of veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan campaigns, the war on terrorism, that's making that thing. And it's funny because it's usually the people who are like, they'll promote like the 22 a day of our veterans, and then the same breath they'll be like, you're going to therapy. I'll be like, what the fuck, it's the same thing, dude, it's connected.
Exactly. And also, I think you know what I think is the real credit for the, you know, quote unquote mental health awakening that society is having now and making it acceptable. It's
Pornhub,
social media. How fast, Pornhub. How fast information travels now, and the ability to see things that are happening in real time, especially horrible things that could have been prevented with adequate mental health care.
I think
that's what's really turning things around on that conversation.
Yeah, the mental health aspect, like, just in the veteran community, in the streamer community, like, having access to that would go so far. Like, I told this story a few pods ago, but I'm going to tell it again. So I have a friend who's currently dealing with the VA. So get this, Mushu. They sent him to an appointment at a facility that is closed. So he had to wait 3 months to get this appointment. He goes to this facility for his appointment, and there's nobody there. The doors are locked. It's shuttered. It's closed. So he calls him up and tells him it's closed, and they make him a new appointment a few months down the line at the same facility after saying that they notated that that one was closed.
That doesn't surprise me at all, man.
That's the VA.
I really think it's going to get to the point where veterans are going to get sick of it, dude. Like, I already have. Like, I gave up the VA. I don't go there for nothing. And I think it's going to get to the point where there's going to be a lot of conversation around it. And
it should be.
There's probably, and unfortunately in our society, there's probably going to be ugly events that occurred that sparked that conversation. But let's be honest, everybody fucking knows.
Unfortunately, and people committing suicide on the watch list is enough of a red flag for people.
Right, exactly.
Who have,
that is not.
Yeah, that's not enough for them, I guess.
Right.
It's horrible.
And, you know, it doesn't matter what statistics you preach to people or what you look at. The real problem and the real solution to the problem, well, the VA is way overfunded, and most all of their employees, you never go to a VA and notice the volunteers have more bedside manner than anybody else.
Yes.
The people not getting paid.
Yes, I've noticed that. And it's crazy to think about that.
Where the VA is dropping the ball. I heard Jake Clark say it one time, the VA is not going to save soldiers. Soldiers are going to save each other. And right. that's what you're seeing happening with organizations like Stack Up and MVG. You know, I think that's where that's the play. I think those are going to get so big that the VA is going to be irrelevant. I hope
so, too. And that's also just getting them access to things like, you know, after action service dogs. Things like that go such a far way. Animals have such a healing impact on people. So it's cool to see that groups like that are starting to butt up, are starting to become more available. So, Mushu, for somebody who has worked with a variety of different charities, like, I know a lot of people out there are always like, you know, some of them are looking for people to partner with and people to do that, like, events with. Do you have any charities off the top of your head that you enjoyed working with that you would highly recommend to people out there looking to do this kind of work?
How do I answer this?
However you want, Mushu. It's an explicit podcast.
I think you should wait to see what I got coming with Do Good Points.
Okay.
And because it's gonna answer exactly what you just asked me.
I keep touching on this thing without even trying to. I'm very curious to see what you have in the works. I'm definitely going to be... do we have a set date of when the information is going to drop? Or is it one of those things where just keep posted on Mushu and it'll drop soon?
I think it's going to be within the next few weeks here.
Wow, that's awesome. I'm looking forward to that. So what is the best place for people to catch you? Are you mostly a Twitch streamer? Are you like making YouTube stuff? I know you hinted at making long-form YouTube content in the near future.
Yeah, you know, when I was making YouTube content, I was also streaming 40 hours a week, and it just got to be too much, you know? I can't sit down and edit a YouTube video for 3 or 4 hours after I do an 8-hour stream, 12-hour stream, right?
Right. No, I see that completely, because it's like you're working two full-time jobs.
Yeah, I try to lay off the YouTube. Realistically do that, I would have to pay an editor. Editors are not cheap, as most streamers know. And being a veteran on, you know, a fixed paycheck, you know, I got to make ends meet where I can. So unfortunately, things have to take a back burner at times. However, you know, my charity events, as my channel grows and my charity events grow, exciting things are happening. So I really want to try actual try hard, you know, long form 20-30 minute well put together YouTube videos of cool shit.
Nice. And is this going to be like game centric, or do, like you said, cool shit? Is this going to be stuff like in real life stuff? Is this going to be a variety of games? Is this going to be like spoken words kind of stuff? Like, this is Mushu's take on this and that. Like, or is it going to just be like a wide open net when you say, like, you know, long form? Is this going to include just about anything under the sun?
I have one idea that I'm starting with. And we can talk about it behind the scenes, but it's going to be, you know, IRL and kind of an adventure thing, but very high tech and like proprietary. Nobody's really messing with it. It does involve a drone. And I want to do like a full, you know, 20-30 minute video of this whole process and developing nice. This system, and who knows where that could go, right?
Absolutely.
We did a food drive over November and December, and obviously that video and that content is going to have a charity spin to it as well. That's why I'm here. So we did a food drive in November and December with Do Good Points, and raised over $13,000. And, I ended up, you know, going to the local food bank, volunteering my time, seeing how they run, you know, 'cause I'm running a major, food drive fund, right?
No, totally. That makes sense. Get an idea of how it works.
Yeah, I went there quite a bit. And met with people and talked with people, met the director. We're good friends, and we can go back and we're going to extend out more food drive stuff and helping food banks, because I really liked the idea of allowing creators the ability to stream and have the donations pay out to their local food banks, so they can use their community to have a larger impact in their. You can use their online platform to have a local community impact. So
right.
I'm trying to like trail different avenues like that that I don't really see other people doing.
That would be huge, because then one could see immediate impact.
If it's in my ear to make good content and make people aware of what we're doing over here in the Dynasty, right. I don't know what it is. I've never had more hope for a year than this one right here, man.
That's a huge statement right there, especially because like the year just started. It's a fresh blank sheet. And having that be a locally sourced food bank thing is super cool, because that way the said streamer can see an immediate impact. They might know the people who are getting this stuff. Like, people might know them around the community and say, hey, there's that guy that helped us out. Like, even if they don't say it, that acknowledgement's kind of there. So that's a really cool way for one to give back to their immediate, like, you know, environment. So that's actually super cool.
Yeah, and I'm gonna mention something else about that. So I did go to the food bank and volunteer, I don't know, maybe 5 days. I don't know how many times I went over the course of a couple weeks. And that's how we got the farm opportunity. We met somebody there that like knew the person that owned this farm and wanted some help with it, and it was a good opportunity. So we came. It actually happened. I couldn't believe it. Right. And we also got I don't know if I threw this up on socials yet, but it's cool. This is going to be also long form content over the next year. We got, so you know how you go up to a food bank and there's a after hours food drop off, right?
Yes.
Kind of looks like a it kind of looks like a big mailbox with a latch in it, right?
Yeah, kind of like the old Blockbuster days when you'd bring back a video when they were closed. Yeah. You just put your tape through the slatch and then you close it, only with cans.
Yeah, yeah. So imagine that, but like, you know, a big box outside the building, right? Like a mailbox, like massive. Like, yeah. You could fit a normal size trash bag full of food and put it in there, right?
Right.
So my local food bank actually needed a new drop box for outside of their facility, and we were able to make connections to get a very nice like dumpster. It's a dumpster, and I'm gonna build it into like a forever proof drop box prototype.
Oh, that's huge.
It's like, I don't know, it's like five by four, maybe 5 by 3.5, something like that. Big enough to, you know, hold
sizable.
What you need after.
You can fit a shit ton of canned food in there.
Yeah, yeah. And then so it's going to have like a one-way mailbox lid that you can fit, you know, basically a trash bag size thing in it and dump it and not be able to get into it, right? So once I build that over, you know, the course of the next couple months here, that'll be YouTube content. And then we have the people that gave us the dumpster committed to doing it in 10 cities.
Right. And the cool thing about that is people could see that video and they could make their own if they wanted to. So if somebody was around, they could do that.
The thing is, we people that donated this dumpster to us committed to giving us one in 10 different cities. So I make the prototype and then we scale.
That's all. So does it like hit you when you're doing these things, like the impact, or is it one of those things where you see it as like a project and then later it hits you like, oh shit, I did that. Like, I'm helping these people. Like, when do you have that aha moment, or does it not come? Like, how does that work with you?
Damn, that's a good question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that.
We only ask the hard hitting questions while somehow sprinkling in dick talk here at Castle Comms.
Yeah, you were 5 minutes past our timer there for mentioning dick. I know
I'm having fucking withdrawal pains over here. It's horrible.
I haven't really got to see my charity impact in person. Does that make sense?
Like, yes, because it's going out to all these other places.
We raise money for organizations, or, well, I guess that's not true. We have raised money for people in my community and, you know, individuals in other communities of my friends' communities,
right.
That really needed financial help. And that was when we were able to send that payment through to them, you know, that was the aha moment. Like, right. Okay, that payment actually went through to this person that really fucking needed that shit.
Just like when you do the work for the breast cancer stuff, and then, you know, people come forward with their stories. Like, yeah, you're not going to the lab and you're not seeing the beakers and test tubes and all the stuff that you're like your money helped buy, but you're getting to hear people's stories. Okay, say again, you cut out a little bit right there.
You're not seeing the beakers or the labs or anything like that. I mean, we're playing Tarkov talking about Dick trying to help out. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, but you get to see the stories from the people who have gone through that, whether it be themselves or a family member. So in a way, that is your gratification. Yeah. That is that, like, the I'm helping things move towards finding a cure for this issue that's been around for damn near forever.
That is true. It does give me, you know, we mentioned earlier the fact that, you know, constantly being exposed to those kind of stories could have a negative impact after a while on your mental health. Well, you're also, I mean, you made me realize just now that it does give you a sense of gratification knowing that you're helping a cause that's so closely related to so many people in your community that support you.
So there
is some gratification and aha behind that as well.
Being part of something that's bigger than yourself, do you think that kind of falls back to the military thing when you were a part of a bigger machine that was bigger than yourself? Do you think that that kind of, like, helps that part of your brain? Like, that whole thing was like, oh, it's part of this bigger unit that did all this good stuff, and now you're part of a completely different thing that was of your own creation that is bigger than yourself doing things that are helping people on a massive scale. Do you think that kind of affects the same part of your brain?
You want to know how I got into that mindset?
How?
I went to Malibu for a week and spent a week at Save a Warrior. And I was there with a bunch of people there was like 15 guys there. And that's when I learned about vulnerability and meditation. And then that's when I learned they were all like Navy SEALs. And I was hanging out with Jeff Kyle, which was crazy. He had some insane stories, and Adam Clark, and those guys were arguably carried some of the biggest dicks I've ever seen in my life, and were able to calm my mind in a way that I never appreciated until like a year after.
Right. Isn't that crazy when you meet somebody like that, like Navy SEAL or like one of you guys, one of those people you just said yourself, certified big swinging dick. When somebody like that comes around and then tells you like, yeah, it's okay to be vulnerable, and they totally pull back like all this, like, you know, the stigma and the machismo and all that other crazy shit that society implants as us as males ever since we're born. Isn't that kind of like crazy?
I took it for granted when I went there. I didn't take it seriously, and I didn't realize until much later that, damn, that shit was the real deal. It changed my life when I actually thought about it and went back and went through the steps that they showed me again. It actually changed my life, dude. It was, and that was around the time I also started streaming, so... Yeah.
What a great time for that to hit. See, the weird thing is, like, let's say you would have, that message would have hit with you when you were there. You might not have been in the right mind space or time in your life to make that an appropriate thing. So it's kind of crazy how our brains hold on to those little moments, and sometimes they come back when we need them the most to give us the inspiration, the strength, or the resiliency we need. So maybe at that time you weren't in the right place to fully comprehend what was being taught to you.
I will say probably less than a year after Save a Warrior, I got to the point where I was homeless, living in my car, and suicidal. And that's when I ultimately made the transition to leave everybody I knew and go start my own life.
See, isn't that crazy how people who are in that spot, when they have nothing to lose, sometimes they won't leave that position because it's unknown. It's scary. Like, sometimes people are willing to stay in a terrible situation because it's known. It's comfortable because they're afraid of the unknown. So that speaks volumes for you as a person, because you were able to, like, find that strength within yourself to, one, not only recognize the situation you were in was not sustainable and dangerous, but to, two, to do something about it.
It's not easy. It's not easy just leaving everything, and
oh, no,
even the parts you don't want to leave, right? But fortunately, if you're able to make it one more day, and you're able to you know, reach out to somebody and get the help you need to figure out what it is you need, it's definitely gonna pay off once you start being a little bit more selfish about your own mental health and stop letting outside influences dictate where that mental health should be or the avenue it goes down.
Right.
And that's exactly what was happening in my journey there. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, okay.
Actually, Tommy, that table work, the hero's journey, dude. It's a crazy concept if you ever look it up.
That's definitely, I might put the link for that in the description when I find that online.
Yeah,
but
you could put the hero's journey description as well as vulnerability TED Talk by Brené Brown.
Okay.
I can give you both of them.
I was going to ask, have you ever done a TED Talk?
No, I ain't that big, man. I just got invited to my first podcast. What do you mean?
I've had people on here who've done TED Talks but never done a podcast. Like, one is not synonymous with the other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. I just figured they were synonymous. I mean,
I would pay for the Mushu TED Talk. It was one of those things where it's cool hearing somebody that's actually willing to divulge, like, the shit they went through, because a lot of times people are very guarded, or they, you know, they just don't want to talk about it, and that's totally fine. But it does, like, a lot more good for the whole if one talks about that, because you never know who's listening, who's going through the same shit. You never know if somebody's listening who's just, like, you know, feels that they're alone in the boat. And it's sometimes it's very humanizing to hear someone else's, like, struggles and stuff that they went through and where they're at now. So that's, it's not an easy thing to do. So I commend you for, you know, coming on here and talking to a complete stranger with internet issues to do that. So you have my eternal thanks for that. That's
like I said at the, you know, toward the beginning of this, open and are able to normalize the struggle, it gives others permission to as well, and it could possibly reach somebody's ears that needed to fucking hear that right now, right?
Exactly.
Like, that's some serious dope there. You have to be able to be relatable to the people in pain, especially if they're your brothers, like our fellow vets, and even if they're not, everybody experiences trauma. Everybody has something that bothers them.
Right. Everybody's got something going on.
Everybody got something that bothers them. Everybody struggles with something. And if you are open to it, the only caveat I would put on there is that if you're in the public eye, I would definitely understand how Healthy Boundaries works when it comes to vulnerability. That's very important. I divulge some serious shit about my life, but there are things that, you know, probably deserve context down the road, and I hope to get there. But there are things that, you know, not everybody should know, or not everybody,
right,
deserves to. Correct, because that will possibly allow your past trauma to be brought up again and used against you, or,
right,
you know, there's just no need for that. It's the here and now, and this point going forward in it. And if you're struggling right now, just know that everybody fucking does at some point, and you need to make it one more day.
Exactly. So with that being said, what would be your best piece of advice to give to somebody who just got their DD-214? Who's getting out of military service, whether it be a 4-year stint or a 20-year stint or whatever? What would be your best advice for that person who's transitioning from that form of life to the civilian life, who doesn't really understand the hardships that they're about to endure? Like, what would be your best piece of advice for them?
I'd say if you're transitioning from the military to civilian world, the more time you were in the military, the more difficult I think it's going to be to transition. I was in 4 years, and it was extremely difficult. So obviously not everybody's the same, but in my opinion, if you're about to transfer out, you should really take some time to focus on what you want in life, so you don't go on autopilot. So you don't just get out and do the 9 to 5 and get, you know, essentially sucked into the current of civilian life. I think if you go through the military lifestyle and you've kept those attributes long enough to grab a DD-214, I believe that you should do more with your life than a 9 to 5. Because you have skills that are skills and things that you've learned that are above and beyond what most people get exposed to. It doesn't matter what job you had. It doesn't matter what your MOS or AFSC was. There's a lot of things that aren't going to show up on paperwork that are going to be valuable later that you're not going to know about. You need to identify your strengths and your weaknesses and keep your mental health in check. Don't get sucked into the 9 to 5. Talk to a civilian therapist not related to the VA and get actual guidance and keep them as a baseline. I had the same therapist when I got out. To the day I got out, I had him for 7 years. So find somebody you like. Don't settle. If you need free therapy and you don't want to pay it out of your pocket, or you're not getting, you know, a rating to Aloha to write love on her arms, they have a scholarship. There's all so other veteran resources out there. Just keep a therapist as a baseline and don't get sucked into the people with no passion, the people that don't take pride in their shit.
Right.
Find a support system and people to reach out to. Find that camaraderie again. You have to have a support system. Don't sit there in your own head, even if it's one person or strangers that you meet once a week at a coffee shop and you always see each other all the time. It doesn't matter what it is. As long as you have somebody to reach out to, you need to identify that person right fucking now, like immediately as soon as you grab that DD-214 or well before, and make sure you have a plan or if your mental health goes south. That's the number one part I think you should take from it.
And that's huge. And just a caveat off of that, if you're being prescribed something that doesn't do it for you, ask for a second opinion. Doctors are not infallible. Doctors are not perfect when it comes to mental health or any form of medicine. Don't be afraid to ask for a second opinion, especially if something is either not working for you or detrimental to you. Please get a second opinion before you continue on. Because the thing about the VA is when they look at their patient records, it feels like they just see you as a number. Even when you're physically there, you're kind of treated like a number, you're treated like a statistic, and you're medicated as such. Finding someone who actually makes a fucking effort to give a shit about you is not an understatement. It's a huge thing, and it can go a very long way. And at the end of the day, it's your well-being. It's your mental health. Like, don't take it for granted, because it can go south very, very, very wrongly in very quick ways, unfortunately. So with all that being said,
if you feel like your doctor or therapist just doesn't give a shit, they don't, dude. Switch. Right.
Exactly. I mean, thankfully, there's quite a few of them out there. I mean, you might live in a place where there's not as much access, but I mean, maybe what Mushu's got working on with like the telework thing is the method for you. And once that comes out, we're definitely going to put links in the description of this episode, because it's a very important topic that I feel is going to be even more in the forefront in the years to come. And unfortunately, it wasn't available to people sooner. It's just one of those things.
Well, scholarships are already available. I will send you the link so you can give it to everybody.
Excellent. So with that being said, Mushu, what would be your best advice for somebody who's about to get into the world of streaming? Somebody who's, you know, watched for a few years or watched a few streams here and there, is just buying their equipment and is getting in there. What would be your best advice for somebody who's trying to find their voice when it comes to making their own content?
I strongly believe that a lot of my success in this is due to the environment I fostered in my community and the people that I guess it would be the line that I drew with how much of an actual shitbag you can be around my community, right? Like, right. we want wholesomeness and memes, and it's fine to struggle and be vulnerable, but you're not going to shame or guilt somebody, right? Like, you're not going to make it feel like an unsafe place. And I think if you're getting into the streaming aspect of things, how you foster your community at the beginning and all the way through it is going to have a huge impact on your success. And that's, you know, that if I had to say the most important piece of starting it and like actually growing it into something, that would probably be the hardest one to change after you have grown it for years. If we're talking, you know, just getting into it and I want to grow my stream, you should be very consistent. You should pay attention to your audio quality and watch your streams back. And you should, and by consistent, I mean, you should stream every day around the same time, or at least every day, once a day, or at least Monday, Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday. You know, you should have a schedule and try to stick to it as much as you can. Consistency is very key. You can't be exposed to anybody or find anybody new if you're not live, unless you're doing content on other platforms, which is also very important.
Right.
Be consistent. Be vulnerable. Be relatable. Everybody struggles. It's not an uncommon thing to talk about mental health. And when some people go home at the end of a hard work day, crack a beer and watch the local news, some people watch the fucking weather station, some people watch porn, some people come home and watch their streamer and decompress.
I feel attacked.
Somebody's in your stream, that's probably what they're looking for. They want to be entertained. They don't want to worry about their problems. And if they do end up talking about them, just be relatable and supportive. When you can have compassion and empathy, do it. But you're allowed to have boundaries as well. Okay. Consistency, be vulnerable, be relatable, and watch your streams back. Foster your community with a healthy long-term purpose in mind. Anybody that crosses the boundary of, you know, shaming somebody for race, sex, or religion, or shaming somebody for a mental health issue or a disability, absolutely gone. Don't even let them ban appeal in a year and maybe give them a second chance. But, you know, depending on what it was, because I'm a huge believer in forgiveness. But I do believe that if you foster your community in a healthy way from the beginning, identify the strong members, the people that are willing to help you out, the people that could be valuable to want to volunteer to help mod for your channel or whatever, identify your core community members and grow something beautiful from it. Work together. It's you're going to have to work with them, because without them, you are talking to yourself.
100%. That was very well said, Mushu. It's like, did you have all of that written down on a piece of paper, or was that right off the cuff?
That was right off the top of my head, man. I don't know.
See,
I am a busy man, and my brain goes a million miles an hour most days, and we're about to the brain turn off time fire, because I've been working, you know, long days trying to get things done.
Oh, absolutely. You're playing the farm game. So did you come from a farm background? Have you worked on farms before? Is this your first full experience of being a farmhand?
My life on this is my first experience actually, like, pretty much in control of everything. Right? Like, back in the day, growing up, or, you know, doing farm work as an adult was just a paycheck, right? But now it's like, this is a potential opportunity for all the work I do here to be, if we're lucky, to be ours one day. So,
right.
It was always a paycheck. Now I see it as an opportunity, and that has, driven me a lot, of Advil and ibuprofen.
This stream's brought to you by Advil and ibuprofen and Motrin. Change your socks. Well, Mushu, we've talked about a lot of things today. We covered a lot of heavy topics, a lot of light topics, and a lot of things in between. Unfortunately, we had some technical issues, so we had some, you know, a little bit of choppy moments, but that's okay, because I think we got the core of the message across. So now is your time to say whatever it is you would like to say, Mushu, whether you want to plug something like an upcoming subathon, talk about a charity event, thank your mods, talk about Tarkov recoil. Now's your time to say whatever it is Mushu Dynasty would like to say. The floor is yours, sir.
Man, you know what? I'll just say this. I wanna thank everybody that supported the food drive that we did from November to December with the good points. I feel like raising $13,000 is an insane amount of money, and there's a lot of people getting some cool prizes soon. And you know, Feeding America statistics say, if I recall correctly, they say they on $1 they can provide 10 meals. So, you know, 13,000 plus on the same sort of metrics with other organizations. We fed thousands of people every November and December, and
that's a huge, huge statistic. That's a big number, especially when you start putting faces to that.
In 6 children in America are food insecure, and we just had a dent in that, and it makes me feel really good. And I'm very lucky to be in this position to ask people to help with a cause like that and support my stuff. I really just want to say thank you to everybody that supported that, and I hope I can make you proud this year.
That's very well said, man. Like, you're doing a lot. You're helping a lot of people. I'm super looking forward to the things that you have coming down the pipe. For anyone interested in anything we talked about, whether it's getting involved or whether it's about the future things that Mushu has coming down the pipe, just scroll down in the episode description, find the links, you know, go in there, help Mushu make this fucking a reality. There's a lot of people out there who need help, and it's cool when you actually get to meet people and talk to people who are taking an active stance and getting all that stuff situated. So Mushu, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for one, not only doing all the awesome things that you're doing, like on stream and off stream, but also taking the time out of your Sunday instead of watching football to talk to a complete nobody while the internet comes out. So for that, you have my eternal thanks. Do you have any following last goodbye thoughts for Anya, or is that all you got?
Nope. If you're struggling, you need help, reach out. There's links below this, and I really appreciate you inviting me on, man. Thank you very much, dude.
I'm probably going to have to ask you on for a repeat, because there's just so many things that I would love to touch upon, and I'm sure next time we get on, the internet connection will be better. So, yeah, let's plan out one in maybe a few months, see how the things that we were alluding to, when they're out in the open, so that way we can divulge more on that, because I felt like we were dancing around it. Was like, I want to know, but I know he can't talk about it. So once that stuff all comes to light, we'll get you back if you're cool with it.
Yeah, that sounds great, man. I actually can't wait. That would be great.
Excellent. Well, everybody, thank you for joining me in popping Mushu Dynasty's podcast cherry on the air. I am the 8-bit nobody, and why don't you guys go outside and smoke and or touch some grass, and we'll catch you next time on the comms.